Maryland sports fans, there's only one sports book in the great state of Maryland with over 50 years experience booking bets and supporting customers. Betfred Sportsbook at Longshots is now open and is the only sports book in Frederick offering cash betting on football, basketball, world soccer, and more. Visit the Betfred Sportsbook at I-270 and MD-85 in Frederick, right next to Longshots off-track betting. Go to BetfredSports.com for more information and your chance to win exclusive merchandise. Must be 21 or older. Play responsibly. For help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hi, this is Jeff Tate, and you're listening to Cobras and Fire. Let me tell you this, rock is not dead.
You're listening to the Cobras and Fire podcast, part of the Decibel Geek Podcast Network, featuring the very special guest, formerly of Queensryche, currently of Sweet Oblivion, a wine connoisseur, world traveler. I'm talking about Jeff Tate, people. Strap in, because we talk about his past, his present, and his future in this wide-ranging, fun conversation. Enjoy.
Fire. I'm your host, Luce Cannon, and I'm joined, as always, with the Untucked Baco. How are you, sir?
I'm fabulous, man. Happy Saturday morning to you. One of our rare AM sessions. I didn't prepare, so I don't have a Bloody Mary. Maybe next time.
No, I'm all coffee. I'm just smiling. I'm all coffee. I'm just smiling next to you in silent lucidity.
Ooh, nice. That's
kind of creepy. A little creepy.
Yeah. Let me get into why we're talking today. In an almost unbelievable scenario, when you consider the timing, I landed an interview with Jeff Tate. Can you believe it?
It's pretty unbelievable that you're actually interviewing him, don't you? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the timing of how this all came together, yes. I mean, it's almost like if I was a listener, I wouldn't actually believe it. But it's totally true, man.
Yeah, I mean, the stars have certainly aligned for this interview. Wouldn't you say the rock gods have smiled upon us to make this happen?
Yeah, I could break down the whole process, but basically our last episode went up on Tuesday, and by Thursday I had confirmation on this interview. So I have to thank Josh Toomey for a little help on this and the inspiration end. It's all good.
Yeah, I mean, even going back 2 or 3 years, one of our earlier bits was inspired by you going to a Jeff Tate show and the mm-hmm. whole juxtaposition of who kind of his idea of his music and everything and who his fans really are, right?
Yeah, we actually get into that a little bit, so I think people are going to enjoy that, yeah. This might be one of the better interviews I think we've had out there. It really is a smooth conversation all the way through. Jeff's a very polite and eloquent speaker. And, of course, he's exactly the kind of guy that, you know, I love talking to. He's just full of confidence and bravado. and he's a little more self-aware than I think I probably gave him credit to, but not a whole lot. But, no, he was a great guest. You know, we haven't really broken down a lot of Queensryche. I know you're at least a decent-sized fan, as am I. But we haven't really dedicated a lot of time on the show to it other than to, like, talk about some of the funnier aspects of his audience. Where is your background with this band? Where do you fall in line with Queensryche fans?
Sure. So, like many, the Operation Mindcrime was the album for me as far as their whole catalog. And it's basically that and Empire for the most part. Little things here and there, Last Action Hero, the song on that, and a couple of select tracks. But yeah, as much as we poke fun a little bit, there is some legit, you know, songs that have never left my playlist from their catalog. And I, when you interviewed him, all of a sudden I realized I've seen Queensryche twice with and without Jeff Tate. And one of the more unusual concerts I've ever been to was in 2006. They rolled out their sequel to Operation Mindcrime, creatively titled Operation Mindcrime 2.
Correct. Yes.
And did you see this tour?
I did not.
Okay. Well, they did both albums front to back, and they had an intermission in the middle, which is perfect because it's like theater. You know what I mean? And we left as soon as the second half started. It was the crowd was like the comic book guys from Simpsons. It was just very – there wasn't a single – I said untucked Baco. There wasn't a single untucked shirt in the audience except for myself and the two guys I was with. It was just interesting. It was – even back then I saw like this is – Queensryche's just a very unique – and that's great. I mean, we don't want all rock stars to be Tommy Lee and Bobby Blotzer, right? You got to have the uniqueness. But it's just – it's – I guess Queensryche, I definitely love a lot of their catalog. I've seen them with – I saw them with Corpse of Dokken.
Nice.
A couple years ago with their new lineup. But it's just been kind of, I don't know, they're kind of an anomaly. Just, it's something you have to sit down with like a notepad and listen to.
I got into them heavily with Operation Mindcrime, like you just said, but I kind of went backwards and became a pretty big fan of that back catalog. I enjoy the EP, The Warning, Rage for Order. I think those are all great metal records, but it was Operation Mindcrime that kind of clearly separated them from like the hair metal genre, and I think that helped them kind of continue on in the 90s. I saw him three times with Jeff Tate, opened for Metallica on the Justice Tour, opening for Judas Priest when they reunited with Rob Halford, so that was, you know, quite a big gap there. And then they played a local festival here, X-Fest, in like 2008 or 2009, and they were kind of one of the middle-of-the-day bands. So I've seen them with Jeff Tate quite a few times, plus, you know, I saw the Jeff Tate acoustic show. And then I've seen the current lineup three times at Grand Rock Timber.
Yeah, and I'm about
three
to
of the
see,
4 years I was they've been there.
I'm about to see them again with the Great Whites.
Nice. Yeah. No, you know what? They put on a good show, and I think the singer they have now has done a better job of kind of mimicking the Tate vocals as he's had more time doing it. So it's still a good show. I do ask him a little bit about his old band. I thought his answer was quite interesting if you read between some of the lines. People will hear all that when the interview kicks in.
Now, I assume you asked him something about Operation Mindcrime, right?
Yep, that came up.
Did you ask him if he was going to, for the VIPs, offer Operation Wind Chimes?
That's going to be a special surprise for you. I will not tease that any further.
Imagine just dangling those in the Fiat.
Yeah, they're shaped like that little in the Fiat with you and I in the back seat just sitting
right.
Quietly.
Ding, ding, ding. All you hear is Operation Wind Chimes dangling.
Yeah. And you and I getting like dings because we have to text each other because the car has to be silent.
Did you also ask him if, with advances in forensic genealogy, if he has hope that they will find Sister Mary's killer?
I did, but that's for our VIPs. So hit our Patreon if you want to hear that.
Which we don't have one.
And that is correct. But anyway, let's get to the interview. I would like to explain something to the listener. There was a technical glitch that involved me pressing record. So the first 30 seconds of the interview, it starts in after I asked him. The first question I asked him was about hearing aid. So you're missing about, I don't know, three or four words of him kind of leading into it. But yeah, so if you're wondering what he's talking about when the interview just hard cuts, it's because I didn't press record. I caught it pretty quick, but I didn't. I felt like I'm not gonna be a dick here. Like, hey Jeff, can we just stop and start over? I just decided to roll with it. I did the Gene Simmons play your face. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think a better story is the fact that you had to cut it out because there's some guy just yelling, "You can do it," over and over again.
If you want to, if you prefer that explanation, that's fine. The other one is that I'm an idiot. Okay. One of the either two, way. So the listeners can they can pick their own angle there. So thanks, Jeff Tate. I think everybody's going to enjoy this interview a lot. Let's kick it off with some classic Queensryche, and don't forget this episode goes great with a warm glass of Panat,
room temperature Panat.
Young at the time. I was like 22 years old, something like that. And they picked us up from the hotel and took us to A&M Records recording studio in Los Angeles. And I walk into the room and it's just filled with all these really famous people. You know, everybody in hard rock was there. And I was just flabbergasted, you know. And the next thing I know, Ronnie comes in. He goes, "Okay, well, are you ready? You know the song?" I said, "Yeah, I think I got it." Takes me out to the recording place and gets me all set up with the microphone. And he goes, "Okay, well, just have a go at it, you know, and we'll just record till we get it the way we want it. And no pressure, just have fun." And as he said that and he left the room, I looked up and behind the glass, I could see the control room was filled with the likes of pretty much everybody I'd ever listened to on record before. It was like, Neil Sean is in there, and Rob Halford, and Eric Bloom from Bleacher Cult, and Ted Nugent, and all these guys are in there listening to me sing, right? Yeah. Well, gosh, I was so frightened, so scared. I just kept my sunglasses on the whole time and just sang until Ronnie said it was good, I completely trusted in his opinion about it.
Very cool.
Looking back on it now, I'm so happy that I did it, because it was a wonderful experience.
I keep hearing rumors they're going to kind of re-release that in some form or another.
Oh, really? That'd be cool.
Nothing yet. Maybe down the line here. Speaking of Ronnie James Dio, we won't get too deep into this, but could I just get your thoughts on the hologram? Do you think that's a good thing, or you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I don't know. It's not for me,
Mm-hmm.
Not something that I would feel comfortable with, but as I've joked, I don't have any control of what my children will do after I'm gone. So I would hate to see what happens to my image when they have control,
We might get a Jeff Tate hologram tour someday.
Oh, yeah, probably. Halloween trick-or-treating in your neighborhood,
Well, hopefully we're talking way down the road. Technology would be far more advanced. So, yeah, maybe you could even shake the hologram's hand,
Yeah, I'm just planning on not dying. That's my plan.
Outlive your children so they can't embarrass you.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Well, let's talk a little bit about Sweet Oblivion. I just found out about this project, a few weeks ago when I saw a news story on Blabbermouth. This is kind of a side piece. I didn't get a lot of information on it. I got to hear the whole record, but how did this come together, basically, is what I'm asking.
Oh, well, a guy at my record company that's based in Italy, it's called Frontiers, Serafino is his name.
Mm-hmm.
He had a protege named Simone Mularani, who's an epic guitar player, fantastic player. And Simone was very influenced by my music. And so Serafino thought it would be fun to put the two of us together, just sort of to see if something musical could, happen. And he was right. We did a record together, and it was very fun and an unusual record to make, because it started out with very familiar territory musically. He was heavily influenced by Queensryche, so the stuff that he was playing for me, the guitar parts were very Queensryche oriented. So it was pretty familiar ground. So we had a definite moment of bonding over that. But then I think we took it, a lot further than that. But the thing that was really cool about the project, in my point of view, is that we recorded it, conceived it, wrote it, all without being in the same room. We were completely in different places in the world. And we met over the internet and made this record. And it was so fun to do that, because it was so pure, we were only concerned about the music. We didn't have to worry about nuances or innuendos or strange, facial tics or things that make you feel uncomfortable with somebody, We didn't have to sit for hours and chat about, worthless stuff that takes up so much of your time with people, We just focused on the music, and that was great. And it also afforded us all the ability to do all our other projects that we were doing at the time and travel. And like I recorded in 19 different countries, on this album. So in airports and backstage at shows I was doing and in hotels. And it was really fun to do it that way. I would highly suggest to other musicians to try this, because it really opens up your ability to collaborate with anybody in the world. You don't need to be in the same city or room or country even,
It's interesting that you say that, because it has a very cohesive feel to it, as far as the sound of the record.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the wonderful time period we live in now, the 21st century. The technology is so powerful and so much better than it used to be.
Yeah.
That you can You know, you can take a topic, for example, something that's happening right now in the news, and you can create a song from it, you know, write your opinion in music, and you can record it, mix it, master it, and put it up on the internet for sale on your site in a matter of hours. You know, you can be completely topical right in the midst of the big conversation. And that is so exciting. And you don't have to wait for the capitalist mechanism to gear up and get into running position and everybody to be briefed on the notes on how to sell the product. And, you know, you don't have all that heavyweight stuff to deal with anymore. You know, it's such an exciting place to be.
It has to be liberating as an artist because you can focus. You pretty much don't have to kowtow to anybody now. You can do exactly what you feel like doing.
Exactly what you want to do. You know, you don't have to edit your music to fit some idiot's format of 3 minutes so they can, you know, play it on the radio. And, you know, he's only made up this format of 3 minutes because it's a mathematical equation that they have to adhere to so they have enough time for all their advertising to play, you know.
you know, with that, what are your thoughts on the way music is now, with, you know, streaming being pretty much the way, you know, taking over how people consume it versus a physical sale? I mean, the numbers aren't there in the royalties for the artist, right?
No, because the artist didn't know how to do it, you know.
Yeah,
nobody knew how to do it at the beginning. It needs to be modified and revamped so that the artist has the, you know, a fair paycheck, basically.
Yeah.
You know, nobody should be expected to work for free. You should be able to make money doing what you do and be able to support yourself, you know?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm all for it. I see some of these numbers that get thrown out there, and it's sad. It's like, it seems like we don't value music as much as maybe we did, you know, 20 years ago.
We don't. And it's definitely an American thing. And an Asian thing as well.
Okay.
But Europe, it's a different story. And a lot of musicians are spending a lot more time working in Europe now and living in Europe because it's much more acceptable there.
Okay.
You know, it's almost reminiscent of what happened to the jazz players in the 20s and 30s and 40s, how they just got, nobody wanted jazz music in America anymore. So all the jazz musicians moved to France, where they were celebrated and people came to their shows and they could make a living, you know. And only now, in retrospect, do we look back and go, oh, my God, the brilliance of Miles Davis. But at the time, you know, nobody gave 2 cents about him.
Yeah. sex off power plays, manipulate the people for the money they pay. We're selling skin, we're selling God. The numbers look the same on our credit cards. Our politicians say don't do drugs. I guess they want us all around to fight their fucking war. Within deep woods, or the banks get fat, the poor stay poor, and the rich get rich, the cops get big. And look away, it's the 1% of America. Spreading the disease.
Switching gears a little bit, I caught your show in St. Paul a couple years ago. You were doing that acoustic, the whole story thing.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It was first of all, it's fabulous. Your voice sounded great. The band you had was top notch as well. But there was a juxtaposition in the audience that I actually wanted to ask you about to see if, you know, how you view it or if you're even aware of it. And that, like, because this was not like a metal show. This was very much an evening with Jeff Tate. You know, there was a certain amount of elegance, but there was a certain amount of the audience that I think got that and came prepared for that. And there was some guys that kind of came, you know, with their old school Queensryche t-shirts, and they wanted to hear a metal show and get hammered, you know. Does that frustrate you? Do you even notice that? Or does it just kind of part of the territory?
Well, I never used to notice it because I always wore in-ear monitors, you know.
Okay.
And I didn't have the audience in my mix. I just had the music, you know, and me. So no, I never could hear what anybody else was saying, except for that tour. It was the first tour I had done using speaker wedges, you know, the old school kind of speaker wedges. And I wasn't wearing in-ear monitors, so I could hear people talking and carrying on conversations. And I was actually quite shocked that people talk during a performance. You know, that's like crazy to me. Why on earth did you pay money to buy a ticket to see an artist perform and to hear the artist perform, but you're talking over top of them? You know, that doesn't make sense to me. It's like, what's going on? What happened in the world?
I
was tuned out and listening to myself, what happened? I don't remember us doing that anymore back in the day, but maybe that's why, you know, we played so damn loud, was to drown out all the people that were more interested in talking about themselves, you know?
I just remember someone like yelling out, like they wanted to buy a round of shots for the band or something. And I'm like, you know what, dude, you know, read the room, you know,
Oh, can I get you a spotlight, sir? Oh,
yeah, okay. Exactly. Well, I just felt like, you know, you were giving a very intentional performance. You know, this was not meant to be a club rock and roll show. You were right in front of us, you know, and it was very intimate. And it was amazing. I loved it. It was one of my favorite shows, you know, I've ever seen you do. But it was like, man, if I was, you know, it was bothering me. I'm like, it had... You know, I was just curious how you felt about it. So thanks for getting into that a little bit.
You know, it's one thing that could really irritate you and ruin your day if you think about it too much. But then on another hand, it's kind of funny in a way, you know, because my daughter actually sent me, I guess it's called a meme, you know, and it's a picture of me.
Oh, man.
It's a picture of me and I'm standing there on a stage and I'm looking kind of disgusted and looking away. And the caption is, when you're trying to talk to the audience and that guy keeps screaming out, Queen of the Reich. It made me laugh.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah, you're definitely right, though. With the cell phones especially, I mean... I was reminded of something you did a few years ago recently when Rob Halford kicked a phone out of somebody's hand.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, oh, well, I loved it. I was like, because on our show, we are huge proponents of put your phone away. We've kind of accepted that if you're going to take a couple pictures, that's one thing. But when people are filming the entire show, they're blocking the people behind them. It's just inconsiderate. It's not in the moment. It just... I don't know. Did you have any flashbacks when you saw Rob kick? And I assume you heard about it. It was everywhere.
Well, what really got me was that when I did it years ago, man, I was like painted to be like the worst person in the world. I was like a criminal for doing that. Right.
That was a rough stretch for you.
When Rob did it, it was comment after comment of "Go, Rob." You know, your phone's mm-hmm. got another thing coming and all these little funny sayings, you know. So it was okay for him to do it, but not me, you know.
Well,
and mine was part of the show. It was the guy who I threw his phone. We actually came backstage and he goes, "God, I'm so bummed. I dropped my phone when you threw it back to me. I couldn't see it because of the lights, you know, were in his eyes." But, I don't know, he wasn't heard about it.
Well, I guess that follows up. I was just curious if you heard anything more about it. But I'll tell you this. I know I'm not the only person. I was okay with it. I thought it was cool.
I thought you were going to say you and people on your show are proponents of violence.
Oh, no, not at all. No, we just think you should put your phone away and enjoy the evening, you know. And if you have the need to take this picture that you're never going to look at because it's not that good, Just take a couple and put it away. I can live with that. You know, it's when the person's filming an entire song and they're right in front of you. I just be courteous of other people. That's our attitude.
The other night at the Aventasia show, there was a guy sitting in the balcony of the venue that we were playing, and he was just filming the whole thing, just sitting there, sitting on his chair.
Well, it's almost ironic that there's footage of somebody filming it on their cell phone of someone getting their cell phone kicked out of their hand.
Yeah, is it? That's funny.
Another thing you got coming up that I thought was kind of a definitely interesting was this 8-day wine tour. It's in October or something like that.
Oh yeah, we do that every year.
This is not the first time.
No, we do this every year. It's our harvest festival basically because we have our Insania wine brand and it's made in Germany, in Southwest Germany, and every harvest season, you know, we all get together and we celebrate the vintage and we eat, we drink, we tell stories, we sing songs, and we have kind of a mini festival in this little tiny German town in the middle of nowhere. It's pretty funny because thousands of people show up to it now, and it's free, you know, and you just come and drink and, you know, have a good time, and you don't know who is going to be up on stage. We have a little stage we erect, and all my musician friends have stopped by over the years, and we get into these like really weird jam sessions where we'll play some Frank Zappa, maybe we'll play a string of songs from the Beatles, and we'll play some of our own music, and you know, we kind of hook up and do different things. You know, it's pretty darn fun.
Have you ever thought about calling it Operation Wine Crime?
Yes, that's been floated by a few times.
Oh, not the first time. So, you know, I'm just trying to, you know, because I'm imagining one of those guys wanting to buy the band a round of shots, you know, hopping into the cruiser with you on this 8-day trek, you know. Mm-hmm. What kind of fan actually, because your name's attached to it, obviously that's the draw for anybody that would go on this, right? I mean.
Well, a lot of people want to come to Europe, for example. They want to go to France, but they're just really hesitant about it because they're unfamiliar and it's a different language. It's different culture. They've never been there. They don't know where to go. And this is an example of a trip where you're basically on a guided tour by somebody who's knows the place.
And that's you, right?
That's me.
All right.
And I've been there a whole lot. I know all the cool places to go. I know what things to avoid. And so you're going to go and you're going to have a really good time. You're going to be probably inebriated the whole time, but that's cool.
are you actually like, are you driving?
I do on some days. Yeah.
Okay.
The days I don't drink.
Okay. That was assumed, but is it like a van or a couple cars or what do you do? I'm just trying to picture this whole thing.
We've got like a, you know, Mercedes Sprinter van, and it's pretty comfy and cushy and safe and fun. And, but yet, you know, it's me driving.
Yeah.
So he got that.
Yeah. How drunk are we talking? Are people taking shirts off at the end of the night or?
Oh, you know, it gets kind of crazy. Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
it's one of those things that, it's always different because it's always different people and group dynamics are always different. We do an Ireland trip and we do the one in Germany and France. It kind of goes where the winery is located is in the corner of Germany, France, and Switzerland, right there in that little corner. So you get to see Switzerland, you get to see France, and you get to see Germany all on the same trip. And then we have an Italian trip that we do as well that's centered around Rome and the environment around Rome, the countryside, which is really kind of pretty cool too.
And so these are people that you don't know, right? These are, you know.
No, it's people that I don't know, but after the week, we definitely know each other. In fact, some people have been to the winery tour, and some people have been on the Irish tour already.
Have you ever been on one where you're like, I really hope that guy doesn't book the other tour?
No, actually, really, people are very cool. You know, they're you know, older, you know, people now. So it's not like they're, you know, young kids, that kind of thing. It's mature people who, you know, want to see some of the world and want to have a guided trip and have a unique time, you know. And it's all, we have only musicians involved. So, you know, that are on the trip with us. So you're getting, there's all kinds of music, traditional music, modern music. We do a recording studio day where we take them to the recording studio and we work on one of my songs at that time.
Oh, kind of nice.
And some people that can sing have sang on a track that I have. And some people that can play guitar, will give them a shot at a guitar line, you know, or a drum part if they play, you know. And some people don't play at all, but they just want to hang out and see how the whole thing works, you know, which is fun, too.
Well, I'll book it once we're done talking. It goes over my birthday, so happy birthday to me. I'm sure it's all good.
It's a great way to spend your birthday. We've had a few people that have signed up
for our absolutely
birthdays, so, yeah, we have a big party.
Slave to the light. You're the bitch, you're the slave to the light. I'm a battle slave. slag. Nothing but a slag. You're a slag. Nothing but a slag.
Talking to Jeff Tate, so I have to ask you about the record Operation Mindcrime. One of the things, because you know, as I'm sure you're aware, it's a very important record to a lot of people. It kind of broke Queensryche in many ways. Was there a moment though? I mean, this obviously had to be a record that took a lot of time to create. Was there a moment during the process that you really started to realize how monumental this record was going to be?
No, oblivious to it. No, that you don't know that until you hear the feedback on it, you know. I've never released anything that I wasn't proud of or wasn't into, you know. So I always think it's the greatest thing ever, and put it out. And some things you're in the right place at the right time. You know, Mindcrime was one of those albums that was unique and different. And we had the power of this gigantic corporate monolith called EMI Records with millions of dollars to spend to promote it, you know. And I think if the same record came out now, it would not even have the same impact, because it couldn't get heard, you know, as much as that album did. And that's the problem with the way things work nowadays, is that you are really limited on, you know, your reach. You know, like I have a heck of a reach because I've been doing it for so many years.
For the history, yeah.
much more than, say, a new younger band coming out, because they don't have an audience yet, you know. So I have a larger, you know, more panoramic reach, you know, to when I release something. And so I guess my point is that, you know, we all, I think, as a band, if I can speak for them, I think all of us were very proud of that record and loved it. And I'm continually surprised at how affecting the record was to people, you know.
I mean, it seemed like Nostradamus now, the way I think the world is looking. So
I've heard that before from people.
Yeah.
But you know, it's a I just did the 30-year anniversary tour of the Mindcrime record that has two more weeks left on the East Coast coming up here in end of June. But it was, you know, 19 country tour, took over a year to complete. And I still get calls from promoters, you know, wanting to, you know, book that show and for me to keep playing it, you know. And I keep saying, well, I have to end it, you know, I have to stop.
Yeah.
it's been over the time limit now, you know, I got to do something else. But it's hard to say no, you know, because so many people like that record and want to hear it still. And I'm very pleased and happy about that.
And it was a bit of a slow grower out of the gate, if I recall right. It broke about a year later, right?
Yeah, you know, for most people, I think, one, they didn't quite understand what it was. Two, they had less of a chance of understanding what it was, because all the lyrics to the album were printed, like, incredibly small, like smaller than, like, on a medicine bottle. You know?
Yeah, I had the cassette. Yeah, trying to read that, flip that little sucker out, but
you couldn't; it was impossible.
But yeah, it definitely one thing I think that really helped you guys as far as going forward from that point. It made a very clear definition between Queensryche and a lot of the bands that you were kind of lumped in at the time, more of the party rock kind of hair metal bands. You know, you guys were more of a musician's band, really, and that kind of separated you, I thought.
Perhaps it did. Yeah, you know, we were the kind of band, we opened up for everybody. We were like a professional opening act for most of our career.
Yeah.
Actually. So we were associated with, you know, bands as diverse as, you know, Bon Jovi to Judas Priest, you know, to Iron Maiden, you know. I mean, those are pretty different bands, you know, different kinds of music there.
Yeah.
But we toured with all those people, Rat, you know, Twisted Sister, for God's sakes.
Not a fan?
Oh, no, I love those guys.
But okay.
Their music is quite different, and their whole message is quite different than ours, you know? Well, no, Twisted Sister was one of the first bands we ever toured with, and they treated us incredibly and very kind to us. And, you know, just a couple years ago, we showed up at a festival in Madrid, Spain, without our gear. It didn't make it. And Twisted Sister were kind enough to give us guitars and amps so we could do our show.
Right on.
You know? Yeah.
You know, a few months back, I read in, I don't know if it was an interview that was reprinting an audio interview, but something along the lines of you thought you had one or two more records in you. Is Sweet Oblivion one of those two records, or do we got a couple more coming?
I've got enough for a couple more now.
Yeah.
I just have to kind of put the finishing touches on things, which I hope to do over this next year.
Would they be like a Jeff Tate solo, or?
Yeah, I don't know how I'm going to categorize them yet. I honestly don't know if I'm going to release them as an album or two albums, or am I going to do individual songs? That's always very attractive right now.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I just haven't made up my mind yet.
My only question regarding your former band would be, you guys obviously worked together for a long time before the breakup, which, you know, there's plenty of details out there if people want to get into that. I'm just curious, Jeff, has time healed any wounds with your former bandmates?
Oh, I don't know. I couldn't speak for them. I could tell you that we have had one meeting, and that was me instigating it. And I was on tour last year with Avantasia, and we were headlining this festival in Barcelona. And I was with my friend Ronnie Atkins from Pretty Maids, and his band Pretty Maids was going to be playing in the afternoon. So I went out to watch him play. And when I got to the site, someone said, "Hey, your old band is playing." And I could hear what sounded like me singing, you know, and I thought, "Oh, God, I better go check him out." So I went and checked him out, and I went up to each guy afterwards and said hi. But they haven't reached out, and they haven't returned communication of any kind, so it's pretty much dead in the water, you know.
It's such a
shame to see what's happened to them now, you know. I mean, they don't have Scott anymore, they don't have me, they don't have Chris, they just have the rhythm guitar player and the bass player now, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's too bad. I mean, you know, as fans, we all want everybody to, mom and dad, to stay married forever. You know what I mean?
I was telling Chris the other day on the phone, I said, you know, maybe we should start a Queensryche tribute band, me, you, and Scott. What do you think?
Oh, well, yeah, I think it's a great idea. Is Operation Mindcrime going to be something that you just mentioned it a little bit ago, but like, is that a band, or is it just like you presenting the album? How would you categorize that? Is that like something that we can see a record from, or?
Well, under the name Operation Mindcrime, I released three albums, The Key, Resurrection, and what was the last one called? And another one, the last one. I can't remember what it's called right now. Yeah, I did three albums under that name. And then that's the end of the project. I think it's the end of the Operation Mindcrime project for now.
All right. Tell us what Jeff Tate's got lined up for the rest of the year. We touched on a couple things, but did I miss anything?
I am just touring. You know, I'm doing some dates on my own in June and in August in the UK. And then I'm planting myself in France for the summer, finishing up a bunch of songs that I've been working on and maybe making an album. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But that's pretty much it. I'm just mostly touring.
And any chance at some point down the line, maybe you'll throw together none of one of those kind of acoustic shows I saw?
I hope so. I you know, honestly, I truly loved that show. It was wonderful experience playing with different kinds of musicians, you know, who played more, different instruments. You know, I had a cello player and a violin player, mm-hmm. a mandolin player. I like that kind of combination quite a bit. I like hearing my music played in a real stripped down way, you know?
Yeah, it worked great.
Which is kind of like a return to the way it starts out, because every song I've ever written has started out either on piano or acoustic guitar, and then it gets built up from there, you know. So this was kind of a way of presenting it in its infancy, you know, kind of stripped down version of the way it started.
Well, if you do it again, I definitely recommend it to anybody listening to go check it out. But it wouldn't kill you to put a button-up shirt on if you go. And anyway, Jeff, this has been a pleasure. I've been a fan for a long time. Thank you for your time, I guess, you know?
Oh, I enjoyed it. Yeah, thanks for having me on, and hopefully we'll do this again, and hopefully sooner than 3 years from now.
Right on. And sure, you enjoy the rest of your evening, and have a good summer.
I will. You too, man. Take care.
See you, man.
Bye-bye now. Sakes.
Give your kitchen the upgrade it deserves with Clearview Cabinetry. Clearview Cabinetry starts as a kitchen built for now and grows with you as life changes. It's flexible by design with full access cabinet construction, so you can go from doors to drawers for storage that works when you need it. Get an appointment-free design consultation and explore all our cabinet options on display in our kitchen showroom and save big money now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
With classes in crisis communication, influence, and data presentation, Gonzaga University's online Master's in Communication and Leadership equips you with the tools you need to communicate clearly and encourage creativity in any industry. Concentrations in digital media, strategic communication, and global leadership allow you to customize your degree. Visit gonzaga.edu/communication and learn why a master's degree from Gonzaga can help you take your career to the next level. That's gonzaga.edu/communication.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.